This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to this week's edition of 5-on-3. We're here to talk some hockey despite the low energy levels because of having to stay up to watch our team not be able to put a rubber biscuit in the back of the net and just overall post-spring break woos. But Lydia Perner alongside James Burley and Sophia Smith, we'll do our best here. There's still a ton of good action in the NHL. Well, depends how you look at it. But as a Rangers fan, we're not doing too hot. Like I said, Devils, they got some drama going on over there. That's I think it's been entertaining. But I do want to, we will get into the Kovacevic and Keefe beef. And then Islanders, you know, I don't know what they're going to do, if they're going to find a way to sneak in. We'll get to all of that, as well as touch on some positivity, the Washington Capitals, and what they've been doing recently. But what kind of host would I be if I didn't ask you how the first 15 hours of your day has gone today? So,
I'm doing okay. We all said how we were feeling before we got on the air. We all said tired, and I think there's a lot of that going around. You know, quick turnaround from spring break here for us at school. And, I mean, we've all been going through the ringer a little bit in terms of how our hockey teams have been performing. I mean, all good teams, all still in the hunt for sure, but
The positivity.
Making us rip our hair out a little bit. I mean, I'm sure there's some of that going on our side of the Hudson in New Jersey, but there's plenty of that going on in Manhattan. So, Sophia.
I'm definitely feeling the lows. There's just been, it's been so strange to see the way that this team has been throughout this whole season, and it just seems to be heading in the wrong direction. So,
and to make matters worse, we're on the West Coast. The Rangers are on the West Coast this week, which screws up our sleep schedule. But you know, it is what it is. We persevere. But like I kind of mentioned, let's start on a more positive note. And I don't know if positive is the correct word, because I don't usually think of the Washington Capitals in a positive light, except that, you know, the Rangers have kind of had their way with the Capitals in recent history. Worst playoff team last season, one of the worst ever. How they snuck in, who knows, but they currently sit at 102 points. They just locked up Jacob Chychrun on an 8-year, $72 million contract. And for those of you who aren't that good at math, that's an average annual value of $9 million. Shout out Google. People are saying it's an overpay. I don't think it is. He was going to be one of the most highly coveted defensive guys out there on the free agent market. But we don't even need to talk about that, because we will. But Alexander Ovechkin, he's going to do it. And I don't even know what more to say other than that he's going to break Wayne Gretzky's goal scoring record. He sits at 889 after last night. He's six away. He'll probably hit 900 in his career, but that's a number that I don't think any hockey fan, no matter like what age or era you come from, thought was going to be touched.
And I think it's fitting that Ovi is the one who breaks that record. I mean, he's going to claim the record, whether it's this year or at the beginning of next year. He's got 11 or so games to do it. I mean, that's achievable. 5 goals to tie, 6 goals to win. And he's going to have a few chances to get to 40 goals. He's on 36 goals this year. Another 40-goal season for the Great Eight, and the Great Chase is on. I have to say, it's been a joy to watch him come back from injury and be this impactful. I've had people try to convince me that he's on steroids, and I'm kind of like at the point, well, sure, you can wear your tinfoil hat, but I kind of don't care anymore.
Yeah.
We've kind of gotten to the point where, like, steroids is like, we're past that. The 90s baseball, that already happened. We're witnessing history happen in front of our eyes. For as much of a surprise the Capitals have been, what's not surprising is that Ovechkin just is Ovechkin. I mean, we all saw a bit of a decline in his game over the past few years, and I think people were starting to doubt him more and more, but, I mean, he's just been lights out all season long this year. The team has been amazing. I think that's really helped him with his confidence, because there was a point really for the past few years where it was post Stanley Cup Capitals, if Ovechkin wasn't scoring goals, this team was garbage.
Yeah.
Now they have a good team around him. I mean, he's the fourth highest point scorer on this team. They've revitalized the careers of Pierre-Luc Dubois. Tom Wilson is a 30-plus goal scorer again in his career, which, you know, a lot of people didn't give him enough credit for. Connor McMichael has been another big surprise. You'd be hard-pressed to find a guy on this team who's actually a minus. That's how efficient they've been on both ends of the ice. I mean, I never thought I'd be saying that the Washington Capitals are the best team in hockey, but, I mean, points-wise, they literally are. And you mentioned the Chychrun extension, one of the best defensive guys this league has to offer. It's a hefty contract, but a good one. If you want to be a good team long term, you have to have guys
like
that.
It's the beeswax candles.
Yes, you need to have
no light bulbs.
Someone locked down long term who has that type of profile. I don't know. I think Washington are going to be a force now for several years, even in the post-OV era. That's just how much of a well-oiled machine they seem to be. And you've got a lot of players who are playing above their weight, including Ovechkin at this point in his career. So I have to say, hats off to this team. They shocked me. I still think they're going to be vulnerable in a playoff run with a team that has a little bit more, you know, playoff experience. Outside of Ovechkin, Wilson, and a couple of these D-men, I'm not so sure this group can say that we've been around here in these types of situations. It's good that the younger guys and some of the more inexperienced guys will have Ovechkin and several others to look to and when moments get tough, but I still think Islanders, Rangers sneak into the wild card and have to play Washington in the first round. That's a favorable wild card versus first overall team that I would like to be in if I'm one of the wild card teams. Hopefully, my team does not become one of the wild card teams, but it's imminent, and we'll keep our eye on that.
I also want to give credit to Spencer Carberry because I think he's done a great job all season with this team and like giving players that didn't have chances previously with Laviolette. Giving those guys playing time and just, I think that this team has really bought into his system and it obviously has worked out really well for them. I'm curious what you guys think about who is going to, like, if you had to make a Stanley Cup final prediction right now, who are you going with? Because I'm like at a loss in the East. I think that I would go in the East, Florida or Tampa. And then in the West, Dallas.
Teams don't lose in the West anymore. Every team wins in the West.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting looking at the wild card races because in the West, they have way more points than the ones in the East. So,
no, the Canucks are like kind of out of a wild card race right now. They would be very much the best wild card team in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think before I answer your question, Sophia, back to the counterpoint of one of the things you said, which I like about the lack of experience for the Washington Capitals, which I agree with, but I think like if you're playing against a Rangers team, the Rangers might be a better example than some of the other teams, and I'm not trying to be biased, but like the Canadians don't have much experience.
No, none.
The Islanders, they got rid of a lot of their guys with experience, and most of their rosters played, you know, one or two rounds here and there, but I don't even know if you can count the past couple seasons of the Islanders' like experience. I think there's a case to be made that there's all the teams in the Metro, which we've been talking about for weeks, have clear flaws. And I think if you're going to like mention a team with the most playoff experience, you're going to go back to the Rangers.
Yeah.
But experience means nothing. Like in the words, what did Gerard Gallant have to say? Like talent's great, but it doesn't matter if they can't play together. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing for the Rangers right now, but it's got to, in my opinion, it's got to be one of the four teams. Like Tampa and Florida, you can just never count them out. Their system, the way they play, their personnel, their coaching. I think Spencer Carberry is definitely gonna have to learn a lot on this playoff run because I don't think you realize how much coaching matters until you get to like a Eastern or Western Conference Finals and realize the small in-game adjustments that a coach makes to win his team a hockey game. A lot of times, you know, it's when your team's bad, it's easy to blame the coach. But when things are going, like when you're in the playoffs, it's easier. I feel a lot of times it's easier to blame the personnel. And maybe that's just us being a Rangers fan, but it seems it's always for us the personnel. Nobody blamed Laviolette for getting out-coached last year against Paul Maurice. Everyone blamed, you know, Panarin and Mika for not showing up. So it will be interesting to see if Carberry is capable of this. But I also think it brings up the interesting philosophy that the Capitals didn't recycle a coach. They went out and they moved, they promoted a guy because there was a lot of familiarity with him and Hershey, and you know, moving the guy up. I thought the Rangers should have done that, but here we are, Capitals. Nothing great on paper, really. Just a team that just works well together, and ultimately that's all that's going to matter come playoff time. And locking up Chychrun long term, you can get that off-season issue out of the way, and just they can really just focus on playing well in the playoffs. But I do think it's going to run through Florida or Tampa. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And
if
then
that's
in the West?
Out West, Colorado. I think it's Colorado. Oh, I don't think that's as obvious of an answer.
No, it's not
though.
At all. That's why
my instinct says Colorado, but I don't want to get into deep thought about that because then I'll be like, well, there's a case for Dallas. There's mm-hmm. a case for
Edmonton.
Always, you can never I mean, the footage I'm assuming you saw the footage they released inside the Oilers locker room after they lost the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I think everyone's seen that. Like, I don't know, just seeing the how painful it was to them.
But they have to go through LA first, and which they always have to do, and they always beat LA. But LA looked great last night.
LA's regular season merchants. Well,
I know, but
yeah. Don't even get me started. I already had this argument this morning.
I mean, we don't have to dive super deep into what we think the Stanley Cup playoffs are going to look like, but I've said since Dallas had that the trade deadline that they had, I've been saying Western Conference Final for me feels like Dallas Edmonton, and I think I honestly think that's the Western Conference Final that hockey fans deserve, and I think the winner of that wins the Stanley Cup. That's been my vision for it because Edmonton was right there, and they're still gonna feel that. I think when the lights shine the brightest is when you're gonna see. I mean, Leon Draisaitl's been the best player in hockey this year.
Yeah.
And when the lights are the brightest, I think that's when Connor McDavid shows up, and mm-hmm. we saw it in Four Nations. I really do believe that this Edmonton team has something to prove. They were right there last year, mm-hmm. one win away from the Stanley Cup. You saw like that video you brought up. It was painful for them, but you could mm-hmm. see the hunger as well.
Definitely.
Like they're gonna come back with a vengeance. And then we haven't even mentioned Winnipeg, who, mm-hmm. by the way, in that game against Washington, Ovechkin scores. And
that was
a great game. And the point that they get in that game, Winnipeg then goes on to win, and they are now clinched in the playoffs because mm-hmm. of it. Ironic that Ovechkin's goal, you know, not only is so meaningful to his personal history, but it also helps in Winnipeg clinching the playoffs. I digress. The point being, the West is just stacked.
Yeah.
The Blues are on a 7-game heater. Oh. They're on 83 points, mm-hmm. and they're the final wild card team.
But here's the issue with trying to get out of the West is I don't think any of these are going to be quick series. I think they're going to go
deep.
That's
a good point.
And that's the issue with skill.
Dallas, Colorado is going to be the first round series. Oh,
exactly.
Ridiculous.
Like that
could be the cup final.
That's going there's no way that goes less than 6 in my eyes.
Yeah.
Like obviously it could happen, sweep a 5 game, but I think if you look at the East, a lot of these like a team you know, even we're kind of counting out the Maple Leafs. Like they're not a bad roster. I don't think they figured it out, but I think there's going to be a lot of quicker series on the East where then I feel like there's just like every series is just a bloodbath out West. So it's like you kind of like the whole point of the playoffs is it's a battle of who can stay the healthiest.
I think it's, you know, ironically enough, because all the teams at the top of the West keep winning and winning and winning, and they're all so stacked.
Mm-hmm.
And then the teams at the top of the East have been a little more wishy-washy.
Yeah.
I think like we might get long series on both coasts.
That's the thing.
But for different reasons, right? Like I want to say the Devils should get swept in the first round, but historically, the Devils, knock on wood, have never been swept in playoff history.
Wow.
And they've got the Carolina Hurricanes, who are a playoff rival that goes back decades with this Devils team. And, you know, I think if Carolina, you know, takes 2 games in Raleigh, assuming that the playoff picture ends as it is now, assuming Carolina, New Jersey is the first round, this is just an example. If the Hurricanes win the first 2 games in Raleigh and then they go back to Jersey, like, I don't see the Devils just taking that sitting down. Like, mm-hmm. I see that series, as much as bad as I think the Devils are going to be for a non-wild card playoff team, because they are, I still think that they don't get swept. Like,
yeah.
I still think that they're going to have something to prove to themselves. We're probably going to get Florida-Tampa Bay first round.
Yeah.
If not, we're going to get Tampa-Toronto first round. Like, that's a series that should go some distance. And I've been very impressed with the way Ottawa has started to make a push here.
Mm-hmm.
They've distanced themselves with the rest of the wild card teams. They're a playoff team. To me, that's pretty much set in stone right now. Obviously, 12 games left, only 5 or so points clear. That could change, but I still feel like Ottawa have played their way into a discussion where, you know, they could sneak out a series win over a not fully fit Florida team.
Yeah,
over a Toronto team that isn't always proven in the playoffs. I think there's a lot of a lot of scenarios here where it doesn't shake out the way we think.
Right. And then but that's when experience comes in, because Ottawa hasn't been in the playoffs for how long? Brady Tkachuk, is he going to shine in those bright lights like we expect him to, or is he going to fall flat?
I do think it's insane how experience, like the regular season literally means nothing come game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's literally nothing from the regular season matters. All that matters is just, I guess, what you do for those next 16 plus games. But there's, well, on the topic of, we were just talking about the Devils. Let's start with the Devils in terms of, you know, being probably not a wild card team. It's, I would give you guys the benefit of the doubt. I don't think that you're going to drop, but all is not well over in Newark. Starting, I do want to hear your thoughts, and I know that's it's probably not that big of a deal, but the whole Kovacevic and Sheldon Keefe thing, because for me, I didn't mind what Keefe said. I just didn't like the way that Kovacevic's words were twisted.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. I personally did not have such an issue with it either, and I think the whole thing has been a little bit overblown by the fans just because.
Yeah, that too.
And the reason being, Kovacevic is one of many Devils players who needs to just play better right now. You know what I mean? I think Kovacevic was a benefactor of playing next to Jonas Siegenthaler for a really long time, and with him injured, it kind of exposed some of the flaws in Kovi's game. You know, having said that, Kovacevic was a revelation for most of the season. One of the best shutdown D-men, part of the top five, I would say, shutdown D pairings across the National Hockey League. Certainly one of the best in the Metropolitan Division, him and Jonas Siegenthaler. And they were excellent. When Siegenthaler went down a couple years ago, it really hurt this Devils team. He went down for a long term this season as well, and it's not been good. And, you know, in the press conference, Kovacevic, what he was saying in the media availability was, you know, we need to have a playoff mentality. And he's right. That's what you need at this stage of the season. And in the middle of asking that question, for those who haven't seen it, to Sheldon Keefe, a member of the media was interrupted, and Sheldon Keefe just said, well, Kovacevic just needs to play better, instead of talking about our mentality. And, you know, two things can be true. So I'm not so much upset about that. It seemed like he was just dragging a player through the mud, and I think it just so happened that, you know, if he had said, any player had said, we need to improve our mentality, I think he would have said, well, that person just needs to focus on their game and play better. Which is true, but I think Kovacevic has been a victim of circumstance, being that Siegenthaler has been out for as long as he had. But this Devils team, I mean, beyond that, they just can't seem to figure out how to have several good performances in a row. You know, they can play well for 45 minutes, 50 minutes, 55 minutes. And when I say well, I mean really well, one of the best teams in the National Hockey League well. And then they make a couple mistakes here and there, and they find themselves, you know, surrendering points. Whether it's 1 point they get to overtime or they blow it in regulation, they're surrendering points that they really need to be getting. They're a team with a good record, but since December 25th, since the Christmas break, there's only three teams with more losses than them, and I believe it's the Sharks. I'd have to check who else, but I know the Sharks are one and the Blackhawks are another. So it's not good company to be in since that moment. Granted, that is where injuries started to come in. That is when there was a long break. But since then, they really haven't turned that corner yet to stake their claim as we belong in the playoffs. We felt like it for a minute with the Mrs. Field stuff. I know you guys maybe saw that. It felt like we had our grimace. And we did. We won three straight home games with that. And then we went on the road and then had another homestand, and we lost three straight. So, I don't know. It's too back and forth, too wishy-washy for me to confidently say that they're going to finish above the wild card. I don't know. If the Rangers catch fire,
they
or the
won't.
Islanders
it's
catch fire.
It's not going to happen.
Well, it's not going to happen, but the Devils are losing games like they want
but
to.
But that would require the Rangers to win games.
Okay, well, we're making a lot of sense here. The Devils got to go to Chicago tonight.
Yeah.
That has to be 2 points.
Yes.
You can't not play the worst team in hockey. I think they're the worst team in hockey, and not take 2 points, even if you're on the road. At this point in the season, 2 points or die. People have been blaming Jacob Markstrom a lot. He came back injured. It was clear that he wasn't fully fit when they brought him back. That was a mistake. I thought, why not just play around with the long-term IR money? They didn't do that with Dougie Hamilton, who's now out for the season. They didn't do that with Jacob Markstrom, who was rushed back to health. They only did it with Hughes, and then they had a kind of underwhelming trade deadline. I'm not a big fan of going out and getting a bunch of rentals, but there's like another $15 million that they could have played around with that they kind of just pushed aside and said, not really. I don't know. I just think that Jake Allen has been too good to put on the bench. I think it's his net. Markstrom hasn't been that bad in the now several weeks post-injury. I thought he was really good against the Canucks on Monday night. That just a couple bounces went against him and they blew it in the shootout. But I think Jake Allen has been too good to not start. And, you know, without Jack Hughes, without Dougie Hamilton, the one good thing is the pressure's off.
Yeah.
No one is looking at this Devils team and saying it's this really great young Devils team with a Vezina-caliber goaltender, with a great star, with a great Norris-caliber defenseman. That's not the team they are anymore. They're a team now that's facing an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. They've played some good hockey here and there. They're only losing games by one or two goals, with the exception of that god-awful Penguins game. You know, they should have a fighting chance to get through a round or two in the playoffs, even without those guys. But I've got to see it. I've got to see the mentality. And while I mentioned Sheldon Keefe, I think it's a little bit telling. You're up 3-2 with 30 seconds to go against Vancouver. Why have you got Andre Palat on the ice? Why have you got Dawson Mercer on the ice? Why have you got Brendan Dillon on the ice trying to see out a win? For me, those are pretty telling players you would put on the ice in dying moments of a game. Why not have a little bit more power from your forwards out there? I mean, I don't think Palat's the type of guy that you'd love to have, you know, soaking up pressure in your defensive zone down 6-on-5 in the final minute of a game. I didn't think that Sheldon Keefe got that one right, and I think it cost the team another point in the end of the day. And I've had some of those questions for him throughout the season. Like, why, when there's been injuries to our top six, did Timo Meier not immediately slide into the top power play unit? That's a guy you've wanted to get going all season long. He's been a little bit behind the eight ball. Granted, has turned it around since the post-Four Nations break. He just loves scoring goals in March. He's been good. But then why not immediately put him next to Hischier, next to Bratt, next to Luke Hughes on a power play, where instead now he's got to play with Mercer, with Halla, and with Nemitz at the point sometimes? You know, I just think that Sheldon Keefe has made one or two tiny mistakes with the roster that really could have fixed some things. But again, that's a drop in the bucket to what has otherwise been an overall disappointing season. But that's not to say that they still can't go turn around and find something. They just haven't shown me yet that they're going to do it.
I think disappointing, but nonetheless, it's also just unfortunate with how some of the ways, like, you can't predict that half your team's going to be hurt for the entire season. Or,
well, you can start to predict it because it's a pretty regular thing that happens now.
You can't bank on it, let's just say. And with, you know, Hughes going down too, you can't, these aren't things that maybe you budget for, you know, one or two major injuries per year, like with, you know, disaster control or whatever. But you don't think that, you know, most of your star guys are going to not all be healthy at once. And I think with also Sheldon Keefe, I do want to go back to talking about him because I was reading. So I'm reading Messier's biography right now. And in it, he talks about a lot of teams, why they can't find success. It's because, like, you know, in the offseason, you bring in so many new personnel changes. But a lot of teams change the coach so often, and that's why they can't find success. I'm not saying this is the Devils' reasoning, but I think just having so many things thrown at Sheldon Keefe, it's been hard for him to try and find any continuity with his lineup because he doesn't know these guys. And it's easy for, like, someone like you who watches every game to see the issues, but ultimately, like, I don't know what's going on with Keefe, but it's worth asking, how would you assess his season?
Well, I think going back to the off season ahead of the 2024-25 year, I was initially like, this guy can never win in the playoffs. Why did they hire him? And then I thought about it for a little bit while longer, and I was like, okay, he brought young players out of their shell in Toronto, played a very high speed type of offense first, rush attacking zone style of hockey, you know, control the game in the neutral zone, put pressure on the other team with a forecheck. And I was like, this really makes sense for the Devils. And it did. And I think, you know, pre-December or pre-January, really, I think there was nothing to complain about almost. I think now what the injuries have kind of exposed is that Sheldon Keefe is a good coach, but some of the more, you know, nitpicky things that I've said really shouldn't be the things that decide games here and there. I was trying to think, when I talk about Timo Meier not getting on the power play, that's more like, can we get more out of Timo Meier?
Yeah,
not can
yes.
we get more out of the Devils. I just think it would make the Devils better if he played on the first power play
a little
bit more.
But that's not like, oh, that's why we lost 2 points
exactly.
against this team.
I think the biggest issue for me is the roster itself. There's been guys who have just kind of fallen down the pecking order in terms of just how impactful they can be. I remember 2 seasons ago, Eric Hall was scoring massive goals in that first-round playoff series against the Rangers.
Yeah, thanks.
I mean... But like the
game,
guy just
game seven,
the yeah. game seven and game five, yeah. and even in the games that they lost in game, I want to say game three, he scored a pretty big power play goal. Like he was all over that series, or no, they won game three. I think
yeah.
it was game
it was
six.
Hughes and Hamilton
game, game
in
six,
game three.
He scored yeah. as well, and they lost. For me, Eric Halla has been, you know, at best a fourth liner this year,
mm-hmm.
but he's still been expected to be the third line center. And for a while, you know, he was playing next to Jack Hughes for a lot of last year as well. While Paul Cotter had a really good start to the season, he's kind of fallen mm-hmm. down the wayside a little bit. Tatar has been like, you know, his analytic numbers are good. But again, that's a guy with like a ceiling of third line winger, fourth line, who's been playing third line, second line minutes. Andre Palat making $5 million a year or $6 million a year for 5 years has not been nearly that good. Curtis Lazar has not been great since coming back from injury, and Nathan Bastian is Nathan Bastian. He's a wrecking ball, but he's not going to move the needle offensively. And when that fourth or third line gets caught in the D zone, forget about it. That shift's lasting at least a minute. And that's not great. But on the other hand, Stefan Nason's having a career year. How did you get that out of him? Playing him with the first line, challenging him to be an elite net front presence in the NHL, and he's been that. Jesper Bratt is having a career year. It set the Devils' record for assists in a season. You know, like, while there's been things to say, like, this is why we're struggling, there have been players you've gotten more out of some players than you've wanted to or have expected before. And I think Jonathan Kovacevic is another example of that. Mm-hmm. Guy who was, you know, a bottom-pairing D-man in Montreal, was maybe going to be the seventh D going into the season, and then by the end of it is coming out as one of your best defensive defenseman guys, although he's getting a little bit of flack right now. And then, you know, you had goaltending issues for the longest time mm-hmm. since Marty Brodeur retired.
And that's not an issue
And
anymore.
Now it's not, that's not an issue. That is the glaring best part of this team has been the goaltending. The two Jakes have been excellent. And even when Markstrom was down and you brought Nico Daws up, he was good too. You know, you have a safety blanket there. So I can't just say like it hasn't been good enough from Sheldon Keefe when there are a lot of things to suggest that he put things in the right places and they have gone well. For me, it's the players at the bottom part of this lineup just aren't good enough anymore.
Yeah.
Eric Halla should be the fourth line center, but unfortunately he's been forced to be the third line center. Brian Hallinen is a guy who's, you guys probably don't even know who that is, playing in the Utica for the Utica Comets, has scored a bunch of goals this year. Why haven't we seen him get brought up? Why does Nathan Bastian need to play a night in, night out? I love Nathan Bastian. He's a guy who wears a Devil sweater proudly. He was taken by Seattle in the expansion draft, and then he said, I want to go back to New Jersey. New Jersey brought him back. That's the type of guy you want to play for your team, but he just doesn't have it, unfortunately. And I'm singling him out because it's easy to, but I think Lazar has been, unfortunately, not up to his standards. Halla, same thing. And you know, then there's just injuries. And Cody Glass has come in and has been pretty good, but he's day-to-day now. Brian Dumoulin has come in, and I initially didn't love that move at the deadline, but it made sense with the injuries to have another left-handed defenseman there. But I think the blue line really took a hit losing Hamilton and Siegenthaler, because now it's been asking a lot more out of Luke Hughes, and he's answered the bell to a degree. You know, a lot of the Luke Hughes criticism, you don't hear much about it anymore. It was a very popular thing to say that Luke Hughes, good hockey player, can't defend. You don't hear that so much anymore, do you?
I was part of that train.
Well, and you rightfully so, but he's done a lot better to shore out his game. I mean, I think playing next to Brett Pesce does help that to a degree, but I think he's learned a lot. Simone Nemitz came up and was a nightmare. Just a nightmare, unfortunately. And he's started to figure things out a little bit. So like I'm really grasping at some positives, at least very recently. But I think that Sheldon Keefe has been the right man for this job. It's just about can they figure out what to do with a couple of, I don't want to say bad actors, but a couple of really not so great role players bringing the ship back. Because, I mean, you've gotten more than you needed out of Stefan Nason this year. Nico Hischier has been amazing. Jesper Bratt's been amazing. Dawson Mercer has been climbing back to, you know, a better role player, better secondary scorer than he was last year. Timo Meier starting to hit his stride. It's just, can the third and fourth line be helpful? And can these younger guys on the D-line now really start to step up and take up the responsibility? Those are the questions. And right now, we're not really anywhere closer to answering them.
Well, I think before we move on to the Islanders, I will say positives. You get the Blackhawks tonight. You got to win.
Yes.
If they don't win, I'm like, the thing is, Devils fans are growing apathetic, like a little bit. Like, they're going to be in the playoffs most likely, but so many fans are just like this team isn't even fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a hard reality to swallow when you spent, at least for me, so much time waiting for this team to be in the playoffs again. And now that we're here and people are, you know, I was at the Devils game when Mrs. Fields won the race and it was electric, and then the team won the game and it was even better. But like, just when they don't have it, they're just like, they just don't bring anything. They don't score goals. They don't do anything fun. And I don't blame fans for like checking out a little bit at this point, because it just doesn't feel like it's super exciting. And even when Hughes and Hamilton were still healthy, people were starting to lose interest like that. But compare this team to where we were in 2016, where our first line was Travis Zajac, Drew Stafford, and Brian Gibbons. Like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like to a degree, some of my fellow Devils fans are being a little bit spoiled. But the players are the ones who have to give them something to be excited about, and they just haven't been doing enough of that lately.
Talking about players that need to give the fans something excited to root for. Let's skip the Islanders. Let's segue into the Rangers.
Okay.
13 shots on goal versus the Calgary Flames. 12 shots on goal against the Canucks, but they won thanks to Sam Rosen. there's not a clutch bone in any of their bodies.
No.
Sorry, Will. I have to be mean to you there, but
score in the third period.
They're terrible. Like, their power play, more like power outage. It's
power
over 15 in their last 15 attempts, over 15. Four for the last 47. I mean, just like watching this, it's let's keep passing the puck around the outside and then go backwards with it, and then it's out of the zone. Like, they're so easy to play against. Like, I forget who tweeted it. I think it might have been Rick Carpinello, but he's like, man, like, teams must see the Rangers on their schedule and be like, yes, like, we got an extra day off, because it's been that bad. And players and Laviolette have started being like, yeah, our effort just isn't there. But why?
Why?
In the playoff race and you can't show up for a game? The one game exception, I would say the Oilers game the back-to-back. Columbus 1-4-0, went in, had a great game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. You're in a playoff spot.
I thought that was going to like propel everybody
start a
streak, and then no.
But here's the thing. It's a back-to-back. I thought it was a little unlucky. That's kind of the sentiment, the loss to the Oilers. You played well in that game. So you show up Tuesday against Calgary, a team that's also fighting for a playoff spot, but I would like to say on paper the Rangers are a better team. And you put 13 shots on goal. Like, that's probably the closest I've ever come to, like, just absolutely wanting to scream on the Chase Bridge. Like, I'm usually pretty good at staying level-headed. That was, like, we were all looking around at each other, like, what are we watching? And it's just, Drury and Laviolette keep on, like, I don't know what either of them are doing. They're not on the same page. There's been a whole thing about Laviolette's the third coach that can't get something out of this personnel, but it's clear what the Rangers roster construction is and what Drury has made of it. They are a team that wants to play East-West if they can, so you got to find a coach that can adapt to that. And I don't know, I'm not saying Laviolette's the issue. He's going to be, if someone's to go, it's going to be Laviolette. Doesn't make Drury look good, but it's bad, it's uninspiring, it's boring, it's frustrating, and somehow they're still in it, but I can't imagine anything good. They scratched Brett Berard for Nicholas Obey-Kubel last night.
I don't get any of this. Yeah. And you called out almost every Devils player, and I want to do the exact same thing with the Rangers, because none of them are doing anything. There is zero offense coming out of anybody. Like, Trocheck is abysmal. Yeah. I watched last every time that he tries to pass and then it goes. Yeah. I was like, actually, who are you passing to? Because it's not ending up on anyone's stick but a Kings player. And Lafreniere, since signing his extension, has been invisible. Kreider, as much as I love him, has been good. Mika, where's Mika March? Like, I genuinely, what happened to these players?
Chris Kreider, right now, the way he's playing, it's like that kid on the group project that signed their name, but the group gets like a C+ anyways. Mm-hmm. And because he's just, it's that bad to watch. Yeah. I think for me, like, the only players that you could bright spot is, I mean, I think of all the stars, Igor's
obviously,
he's trying
to
do what he can. I'm never as critical on Panarin as a lot of other fans are, because
he's had a decent season. I don't have really any complaints.
Yeah, and I think the thing that people don't realize about hockey is there's a reason there's five guys on the ice at all times, and it is so hard if only if one player is pulling their weight and the other two line mates plus the defenseman aren't. They're all going to look terrible. It's not like it's the what makes a team work is being, you know, functional as a unit and as a whole. And that's not what the Rangers are. I do want to shout out Sam Carrick. I think Carrick's played well.
Yes, absolutely.
Johnny Brodzinski, he had two goals against the Canucks. Like, he plays with heart. Will Cooley's probably going to win the Stephen McDonald Extra Effort Award. So that's great for my agenda, but not much else. It's just, it's bad and it's boring.
And the defense has been like fine the last few games, but
not the team defense.
But like Keandre, just everything he's doing is so, like, I'm just at a loss for words. I think that Will Borgen has been a shining spot, and Schneider. I want more from Fox. Everyone needs to be so much better, and I really don't understand. Like, you're in a playoff, like, you're in the playoff race, no question. And last night, I mean, the Kings are so good at home, obviously.
Yeah.
But you score the first goal. They did this multiple times in the past few weeks, too. Like, they get the first goal, they get the lead, and then they lose by 1-2 goals. Why?
Yeah.
Where's the offense?
It's also, like, going into the third period, you know if the Rangers are down, like, they're not coming back. Like, last year,
last year it was and you get a power play, okay, automatically they're going to score.
You know that the power play is just going to be a waste of 2 minutes. I would honestly rather them reject it and play 5-on-5. And same thing with the penalty kill. Like,
penalty kill's been good, right?
That's the thing.
It was good last night.
It's not clutch, and it hasn't been. And it's like, you can, and I'm sure you can attest this just being a hockey fan, You know when your team is, despite the numbers, despite if they're first in the league or 31st in the league on the penalty kill, or 32nd, you know when your team's about to give a penalty or a goal on the penalty kill.
Hockey's a momentum game. Yeah. I mean, you can sense it. Sometimes, you know, you get a bounce and, you know, the game goes against the trend of the momentum and the composure, the way that things are going against the run of play, if you will. But I mean, I've gotten the sense watching my team. I've gotten the sense watching your team. And really, most of the teams that are trying to be in a race for the Eastern Conference wild card, or at least try to push for the playoffs, there's kind of been a running joke that, like, none of them want it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. The same thing happened last year.
Yeah, yeah, and that's like, how you get the Washington Capitals, the worst playoff team in NHL history, to sneak in. But then you also look at it; you go a year further back, the Florida Panthers were a very low points playoff team. And then they made a race all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. Unfortunately, they didn't win it. But, I mean, you know, there is opportunity where there is garbage hockey, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there is a chance that, and again, this is being very, very hopeful and kind of me not disregarding what you guys have just said, all the criticisms you just laid out. But you've got arguably, I mean, with the numbers right now, I'm looking at every goalie who's played at least 25 games this year. Goal saved above expected per 60 minutes.
Like,
Igor's number six. That's better than most goaltenders in the NHL. You'd want that. Jake Allen is number one in that category, but I digress. You've got Artemi Panarin, who is on 30-plus goals, who is on over a point per game. Ideally, you'd have more than just two guys who are 20-plus goals. That's kind of subpar for how many good
Cooley's
players.
Cooley's at 18. He'll get to 20.
Cooley's at 18?
Yeah. Don't ask me.
Cooley's 18. JT Miller's 18.
Kreider, like,
Trocheck and Panarin are the only ones who are 20 or higher. Zibanejad and Lafreniere at 15, yeah. Kreider's at 19.
Yeah,
you're gonna
have
you're gonna have more than one by the end of the season, more than two by the end of the season, sure. But I mean, Kreider's coming off of a 50 goal season, and he's on 19 now. JT Miller is a guy that you brought in to be like a top line level goal scorer. He's been good, but he hasn't been amazing.
He's been plagued by the disease that the Rangers
by
call
the surroundings.
Cross ice passes, sure. And not playing North hockey.
What all of this is to hopefully come around to, though, is that there are the legs here for a team that can get it together within a week's notice and put the rest of the league on hold. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but with how bad every wild card team has been, I think the only wild card team that has a positive record in their last 10 games is the Ottawa Senators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Islanders are 500. Every other team is 4 wins in their last 10 or lower. The Rangers have an unprecedented opportunity to sneak into the playoffs here. Mm-hmm.
They're not going to do it.
They're 1 point away.
So here's all right.
They have 2 games behind. Everyone else has a game.
That is true.
Okay, games in hand. Okay, sure.
Let's be optimistic for a second here, Sophia. So we play the Ducks and the Sharks. It is a back-to-back.
It's a back-to-back. I was going to bring
that's
up.
That's 4 points that you have to get.
But
there's no debate.
Anaheim's
a tough team to score goals on.
That's
but,
the thing. Yeah. In Anaheim, too.
Because look at the rest of the...
But
the
you would, I would, I would rather see the Ducks and the Sharks on my schedule as a road game. And the Rangers are a better team on the road as well. I think before last night, they were 8-3-3. So now I think in their last however many, it's 8-4-3. They're a good team on the road. They've been obviously in California for the week. I think they're practicing. They're still in LA, but yeah. They'll probably just trek up to Anaheim. I would rather see the Ducks and Sharks on my schedule than I would, you know, the Maple Leafs and Oilers that we had to play previously in the week. And then here's just crazy thinking. Like, if you look at the games for the end of the season, you have the Hurricanes, you have the Panthers, you have the Lightning. But
they're not fighting,
If they're locked up, you know, the Panthers and the Lightning and positioning, like, they might start resting guys.
I don't think... I hate to burst the bubble because I know let's be positive. I think while the Hurricanes, Panthers, Lightning, sure might all be playoff teams, I think they're all going to be playing for their position in the playoffs.
That's because it's so close.
Because it's
on
very
the East.
Tight. And I don't think the Rangers are going to have that luxury of playing against an AHL goaltender in those final few games. I know the Rangers have had trouble with scoring on backup goaltenders historically.
It doesn't matter.
I don't think you're going to get any favors there.
They don't win against playoff teams anyway.
They don't win against anybody.
But the games that they do win, actually, when was the last time that they beat a playoff team?
Well, let's look at that. The Canucks,
Minnesota,
Fringe, Minnesota. That was in OT.
I mean, the Columbus game, I think, was felt like it could have been a turning point. You know, you go on the road
to
Columbus, you win 4-0. You know, that's a standout victory against a team that you're fighting for this playoff spot. I think Columbus have now kind of, they're still in it for sure, but they've kind of, you know, been a little less loud in that conversation.
Yeah.
They didn't follow it up. I mean, they had a tough back-to-back. You know, then go home, which is, you know, it's not like really, like, Columbus is not necessarily close. It's a division rival, sure, but you have to go home on a back-to-back and play Edmonton. That's a tough game to continue the momentum in. So I think that they were a victim of circumstance there, and that game felt like it could have been a turning point.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I thought that Devils homestand, the Mrs. Fields era, really felt like that was going to turn things around. Like, I mean,
I love this Mrs. Fields
saga. Think about it from my perspective. I worked at SNY over the summer. I got to see the inner workings of Grimace come to life.
Oh, yeah.
And the Mets were awful, and then they were one of the best teams in baseball. Like, literally, the best team in baseball, statistically, after Grimace. It felt like fate for me. And then they just kind of laid an egg this recent homestand. So, victim of circumstance, sure. I've said that a lot on this podcast. But I do think that felt like that was the opportunity, and it kind of got away from them. If they can come home from the West Coast with, I would say, at least 3 points from this Anaheim-San Jose back-to-back, that's enough to feel good about going into that game against Minnesota. And then they get a few days off, and then that is a massive, massive 4-point game at The Rock. on Saturday, April 5th.
Gosh, I thought we were done playing the Devils and the Islanders, and now I see the schedule. Yeah, that is a huge
game. Yeah. With seven games left?
Yeah.
That's awesome. But like, that's going
to
be
so
fun.
You talked about Florida 2 years ago, and to get into the playoffs, they had to, like...
They had to win these types of games.
Yes, but the Rangers haven't won three in a row since, like, December.
No, it was November. We were actually talking about this the other day. Someone pulled it up.
So this is just impossible to me. Like, I don't understand why that...
That's a good point.
They win two games, and it's... Like, they have back-to-back shutouts, and then they lose, like, 7-3.
I think it was going back to that, like, Western road trip. It was, like, Seattle and... I don't even remember. Vancouver and... Yeah, because that was... Someone was actually mentioning that. And there's just nothing... I feel like there's just nothing for us to base our arguments off of, because it's like... let's look at the Flames game. Artemi Panarin rips one home in the first... Like, it was like a minute and 10 seconds into the game. You're up 1-0. Like, your fans are into it early.
Yeah.
Like, and you can't build off of it. I don't know if they're taking things for granted, or I don't know if, like... They're taking a lead for granted, but then you look on the other side of the token. Like, sometimes it can, in a one-goal game, if you're losing the one-goal game, it can be hard for the other team to keep that. Because, like we said earlier, hockey's just a game of momentum and swings. So you look at that and you see maybe can you get that game-tying goal? And often, like, in one-goal games, you see the quick two goals that a team scores, and all of a sudden it's 3-2 with a score change. They just haven't been able to do that. They haven't been able to build off a lead and play with a lead. They haven't. You're finally starting to see Igor's frustration boiling over. Last night he did some stick work. He tackled, I don't remember who it was. It was a Kiefer Sherwood or someone the other day against the Canucks.
There's been a lot of that going around. Markstrom broke his stick after the shootout against Vancouver.
I just think these goalies on our teams are frustrated because they're doing their part. And also, I mean, I can speak more for the Rangers than I can for the Devils, but you might be able to speak for the Devils. No matter what, Igor could have a 50-save night. If he loses, it's his fault, according to, like, tons of Rangers fans. Oh, he took 11.5. Oh, he did this, he did that, and he can't make a clutch save. You're not going to win games 1-0. If your excuse is Igor didn't do what he had to do last night, you're not going to even win games 1-0.
I was having issues with Igor a few months ago. That has all turned around now because I think that he has proven himself. And he has. Last night, they were only in the game because he was playing amazing. And they could have come back and it would have been. That was because of Igor. But no, I did have issues just because it felt like he was getting out-goalied when, like, he is supposed to be the... Like, if they had come back last night and he was the reason, then, like, that's what should happen. Mm-hmm. But they didn't score. And we should talk about Sam Rosen because, obviously, he was honored the other night.
I cried watching that.
I know, me too. Yeah. And they obviously won for him, but did you see what he said?
They're not listening to me.
I go into the locker room. Yeah. And he was like, I go into the locker room and I tell them, like, you can do it. And then they don't listen to me.
Yeah.
And I feel so bad for him. Like, he should get the Stephen McDonald Award.
And the fact that they're not going to let score another power play goal.
Oh, yeah.
For him to announce
that. That would be so sad.
I mean, it's just the power play is abysmal. And the Rangers haven't been a good 5-on-5 team in years, and the power play, the special teams, has been what's gotten them through their 5-on-5 woes, and now your power play is towards the bottom of the league, so 5-on-5 is showing its true colors, and now you're relying on, you know, shorthanded goals to get you to win games.
You lead the NHL in shorthanded
goals. I think it's frustrating just watching that nobody's willing to go and get a greasy goal, and there's so many points that are being left on the table left and right. You go you go back to December, they were 3-10 in December. The Colorado game, you're seconds away from getting a point out of that one, and you blow it, and you can't put together consecutive performances. And you were kind of mentioning that with the Devils too, just not being able to put consistent play. It's just we've been talking about it all season, trying to find a win streak or a spark, and the Rangers just have nothing. Miller provided that for a bit, but I think he's also being victim of just fatigue.
Yeah.
I know that was a big storyline as well.
And also, Ottawa and Detroit lost last night, so getting that win last night would have been great.
And Montreal, too.
Nobody wants it.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to make the playoffs in the East.
But, give your closing thoughts on the Rangers before we mention maybe one team that wants it.
I don't think they're making the playoffs. Yeah.
I think this is us coping, though. It's like us being like, oh my gosh, if they make it, it's great. But if they don't, like, we expected it.
But look, I will say this before you guys get the final word on the Rangers. If they made the playoffs now, it would be an achievement. It would.
Yes.
But on the onset of this whole season, considering what this team is capable of, considering the players they have, the goaltending they have, top to bottom, this team should be in a race for first place in the Metropolitan Division, not a race to make it through the wild card.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Wait, actually, I do have a question, quick question, because I was thinking about this last night at like 2 a.m. after they lost. If the Rangers made no changes, they never released the Barkley Goodrow information over the summer, mm-hmm. they never got rid of Jacob Trouba and Lindgren and whatnot, would the season have gone different?
I think the Goodrow one is a little different because I think he was so valuable down the stretch last year that it hurt a lot of people that he was gone in the manner that it happened.
Yes.
And I think that coming to light changed the ethos in the Rangers locker room. I think mm-hmm. a lot of people like maybe already knew about it within the locker room, but the fact that there was like now this external pressure of like, wow, how do we treat our guys in this locker room? Are we a bad locker room? And like what that noise is, I mean, these are all professionals. They do their best to keep that noise out, but they hear about these things. You hear players confront members of the media all the time about things that get reported and whatnot. So, like, these are real things that happen. But as far as the Trouba and Kakko stuff, the mid-season stuff, I thought those were good moves that helped the team, at least initially.
Me too.
Like, you see Kaapo Kakko scoring goals in Seattle, and I think that probably hurts most Rangers fans.
But that's a situation where both teams won the
trade.
100%. So I think that the moves they made within the season were generally positive for the most part, even going into the trade deadline. But and that includes the extension to guys like Will Borgen, who I think has earned that contract. Mm-hmm. But peeling it back to the offseason, no, I think they could have done things better. Do I think that it ultimately changed the season this much? Probably not. I do think they made the right moves within the season, so I think it's tough to say that, you know, if nothing changed, they would be much better.
Yeah, I don't really think they would have been much better. And with Goodrow, obviously, like, the team morale, I think, took a hit. But Sam Carrick was a good replacement for that. So, but I don't know. I think that Trouba had to go. Lindgren had to go. I don't think it would have made a difference.
I think if they had kept the exact personnel, minus obviously like Wennberg and Roslovic from that last year's run,
and Gustavsson,
the season would have went better. But I think Chris Drury looked at last season and was like, this team isn't going to get past where they couldn't get past last year. We need to start making changes. So I don't, it's the manner he did everything, but I don't necessarily think that the way he did it was wrong. Off season will be interesting this year. What do you want to do with Keandre Miller? Will Cooley's due for an extension? He'll be a restricted free agent. Canucks fans want to offer sheet him. Yeah, no, that's not happening. But anyways, last team, we'll just quickly talk about the Islanders. They're making noise. They could find a way to sneak in. They always do this, but the controversy the other night, the goaltender interference call.
Oh, wow.
This is what I want to quickly talk about.
Loved because Palmieri's comments on
it. I know.
I did too, but that is like a call that I feel like the NHL has been making. Mm-hmm. Like, you breathe in the blue paint. You're near the blue paint. There's a chance that it's going to be called goaltender interference. And here's the thing. They called it no goal on the ice. It's hard to find. You call that a good goal on the ice, it stays a good goal. You call it no goal on the ice, it's hard to find a, you know, admit that, because I do really think it was a closer call than Islanders fans and mm-hmm. hockey fans are making it seem, just with precedent set. But I don't know, I didn't think it was that outrageous a call, but I do think what Patrick Roy and Palmieri said we're also 100% correct. Toronto has no idea what they're doing. I don't, just get your guys' thoughts on that quick.
I don't know. You look at Merz Lincoln's, and he looks like he doesn't know why it was called back.
Yeah. Mm.
So, and also, if, like, the Islanders lost that game, right?
Yeah, in a shootout, I believe.
Yeah, so that's a crucial point for them. So, yeah.
And
I don't know.
Need,
I can,
they,
I can
they
understand.
They need regulation wins
right.
for the tiebreaker.
Yeah. So I can understand the frustration. Yeah, I think you covered a lot of it.
I think the goaltender interference thing has been boiling for, like, several, like, I would say the better part of a decade.
Yes.
I think we've kind of, I can't remember the last time there was, like, a uniform idea of what goalie interference was. It's kind of like, I mean, you and me can kind of talk about this. It's kind of like a handball in soccer.
Yeah.
Where, like, well.
When is it impactful?
Like if it hits someone's hand, like, they can't always control that. If someone, like, nudges into the goaltender, is in their space in the blue paint, like, did they actually affect it? Was it their fault? Could they have avoided it? Things like that. I think there's never going to be a concrete answer on it, unfortunately. And it's only going to continue to produce moments of frustration like this. And it's especially painful when you know you're pushing for a playoff spot. But I'm interested to see what the Islanders do tonight. You mentioned they need regulation wins. That's
They're
not some
the Canucks tonight,
yeah.
Right?
Vancouver is gonna go for the New York metro area sweep of all these teams tonight.
Hey, no, we 12 shots on goal, but we beat them.
Oh, does that? Oh, yeah. I forgot. Vancouver did not beat the Rangers. Who did? You guys just lost to LA. That's my fault.
We lost to LA, yeah. Calgary, Edmonton.
For what it's worth, though, Vancouver are not technically out of the playoffs yet in the West.
They need this win.
And they need this win, too, and they've been playing pretty well. Even if they didn't win against the Rangers, they were the better team for most of that game.
Yes.
And they have been playing pretty good hockey. They were not the better team for most of the game against the Devils and still found a way. Mm-hmm. So that's usually a good sign of a team that can fight for the playoffs. If, you know, on your back foot, you can still score goals, still win games.
They have a tough schedule, though. They have Tampa twice, Hurricanes, Wild, Capitals, and then Rangers, Flyers, Devils, Capitals again. And so, yeah. I mean,
there's no easy games in this league.
No, but I would say that's a tough schedule.
And look, somehow, the hockey gods have made it so that the Montreal Canadiens are in the best shape out of any of these teams. Despite the fact that they've, you know, lost three in a row, one of which was to the Islanders. They've picked up points in overtime here and there. They've got to play Philly. They've got to play a home-and-home with Florida. They've got to play Carolina. Mm-hmm. They've got to play Boston, Ottawa, Carolina again, like, and Toronto. Like, it's not going to be made easy for them either. All of these teams have a tough road to the end of the season. And it seems like no one wants it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to make of it. If I had to pick two teams to make the playoffs right now, Ottawa's definitely one. And I would still lean towards the Rangers.
No.
I would.
You're too nice.
No.
I think they have better players than all the other teams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the optimism.
Like, who on the Canadiens is like, am I supposed to believe? They do have two games in hand, granted, but who on the Canadiens am I looking at and saying, like, yeah, the Rangers are not a better team than them? Like,
but they haven't. They haven't proven themselves.
They haven't.
But here, the Canadiens, they're playing with their energy. You know, they're a young team, and they're like,
and
we're still in
it. They want it.
I don't think the Rangers want it.
They've lost three games in a row and have a worse goal differential than all the other teams, but they're still in better shape. Like, I don't understand. Like, Detroit's not technically out of it either.
That game,
Columbus is not out of it.
The Avalanche.
Columbus has won two of their last 10.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened to Columbus, but I will say the Avalanche Montreal game. I turned the TV off, like, I changed the channel, and it was like 3-0 Avs, and it was just an Avs domination. And then I get a tweet from one of the Rangers beats, like, "Oh, it's going overtime," and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, you're kidding me! I thought that the Avs took care of business. Ryan Lindgren scored a goal. Mm. Like, I was like, there's no way that Montreal gets a point
or two.
It's
a valuable point.
And yeah, it's in this race, every point's valuable. And at the end of the day, teams, we just mentioned it, Devils, Islanders, Rangers, all they got to do is find ways to pick up points. Rangers will have opportunities to do that this weekend. Devils
tonight against Chicago. Good news is Montreal are on the road for their next three games.
Okay.
Two of which are against Carolina and Florida.
Okay.
That'll be tough.
That's tough for them.
Well,
good news
there'll
for
be,
teams like the Rangers.
And there will be a lot of good content for next week to talk about.
Hopefully.
With the Eastern Conference race heating up and all of that considered. But for today, we covered a lot of ground here, actually. Run us out of time. Lydia Perner, alongside James Burley and Sophia Smith, thank you for listening to this week's episode of 5 on 3. 5 on 3 is a production of WFUV Sports.